All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report, and we are wrapping up this weekend show with a good friend of the show, Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market blog. That's well worth your time to visit every day as Mark breaks down some of the key data points, some of the key currency and market moves that are catching his eye. Now, Mark, we're going to start off with data point that a lot of investors were looking for this week, where next week we're going to have some more important, I think, data points come in. But we received the Q3 GDP number. The headline number here was that the Q3 GDP beat estimates with a 2.6% increase. The estimate was 2.4%. But when you drive down further into this number, excluding trade, inventories, when you do look into that, you realize that this number, again, little over 1%, just continues to show a general slow growth, I guess, in the U.S. economy. Nothing extreme on the upside, nothing extreme on the downside. Mark, what was your takeaway from the GDP number for Q3?
Yeah, sure. You know, so as you said, the U.S. economy grew at an annualized rate 2.6%. Put that in perspective for you, contracted 0.6 in Q2 and 1.6 in Q1. So just adding those numbers up, you see a pretty flat number, right? 2.2 down in the first half, up 2.6 here in Q3. I think that in some ways, I think that the market is looking well past this Q3 rise in GDP. In some ways, it's the mirror image of the challenge we had in the first half. And that is the way they do this GDP math means that sort of inventories and trade play a big role. They tend to be the most volatile elements there. And trade was really the story with the Q3 GDP pickup, just like it was a big drag in the first half of the year. And it's interesting that when you think about, well, what does this mean? Where's the U.S. economy going? In September, when the Federal Reserve made its latest forecasts, its dot plot, if you will, it's called the Summary of Economic Projections. You can find on the internet. They publish it pretty easily. They changed the forecast for this year's growth to 0.2%. And that's about what we are, more or less, through the first three quarters of the year. That tells me that they, like the market, are talking about practically a stagnant Q4. So takeaway is not letting this high GDP number, 2.6%, best quarter of the year, it should be filed more under noise than the signal. And the signal is the U.S. economy is still losing momentum, and we'll be lucky just to escape with a few quarters of stagnant growth.
Mark, I think that's such an interesting take on it and such a great point, because that is not really the way the media has reacted to the two negative quarters of GDP or this positive quarter of GDP. They tend to swing emotionally and go out on a limb saying, oh, we're heading for a recession for sure. Or, hey, good times again. Look at how much we're growing. But when you bring up those inventories and you bring up the point that really it would be an essentially flat year, and we have that stagnant growth. I had mentioned to you off mic, you know, we have the stagnant growth. And we have the high inflation, we have the high energy prices, we're starting to see some pressure to the labor markets, and labor markets are not keeping up with inflation. Isn't that what stagflation is all about? And you had an interesting response. So I'd love to hear, you know, how would you respond to someone that thinks, isn't this what we're talking about when we talk about stagflation?
Yes, so stagflation is this, it's kind of like, you know, you think about like the Econ 101 classes, stagflation should be impossible for this, like our capitalist mindset. Because that means that you have both high inflation and weak growth simultaneously. And at least according to the, you know, the models, right, weaker growth should bring down inflation. The problem, I think, is partly that they're both not on the same cycle. That is that prices of goods and services take a while to adjust, while the price of money is instantaneous. And so that just reflects this like that different parts of the economy are moving at different speeds. And so I suspect that if you take a snapshot smartphones these days. I think I got three cameras on my phone. I didn't even know I needed one of them. But you take a snapshot of the economy, and you would see that exactly as you say, high inflation and practically no growth, no real growth. However, I think that you want to keep that, you want to change from being like the in the analog world to the digital world and take a video. And I think you'll see that the stagnation part of this story is true, and I think it's going to last several more quarters. The inflation story, though, is much more dynamic. And here's what I think happens is that we want to look at the recent past to see like what's new to the story. And if we take too far of a look at the past, we're giving too much weight to what happened a year ago, which is, of course, what everybody does when they look at the year-over-year rate of inflation. What I did was I took the Q1 inflation and just annualized it. Take the monthly numbers, annualize it, you get something close to 10%. Same thing for Q2. And in Q3, it falls sharply to 2%. So what's the true inflation? Is it should we look at like last Q3's inflation numbers to tell us something about the importance of what's going on now? I think that the year-over-year look at inflation, the CPI, sort of distorts, gives much too much credit to the higher inflation, and you lose sight of the recent development, which is that inflation, price pressures measured by CPI, have moderated sharply. And I expect this to continue here in Q4, beginning with the October print that comes in, I think, a week or so after the jobs data. So I begin looking for the inflation numbers to come off, and that'll all support this like new narrative. By new, I mean the past week or two, where the market thinks that now we've got the Fed funds peak priced in, and the Federal Reserve is likely to take its foot off the brake so hard after this hike next week of 75 basis points. The market looks for a 50 basis point hike, and then maybe 225 basis point hikes in the first part of next year. So the terminal rate is still seen somewhere between 4.75% and 5%.
So, Mark, if that all plays out, then the Fed is at peak hawkishness. They get in a few more rate hikes, but they're to a lesser degree. Inflation comes down. The economy is still very much stagnant, but it's not crashing. Markets, yeah, they pulled back, but they also haven't gone through a huge capitulation event. Does that mean that maybe something won't break? That whole concept that the Fed is going to keep hiking until something breaks. Is there less of a risk there?
I don't know about that. I think that so the markets, I think, monetary policy takes place, its effectiveness is with a lag. But the markets are anticipatory in nature. I think one of the things that has stuck with me is how strong the stock market was in 2020, hit by the COVID and economic shutdown. The stock market was great. And so that is to say, you could have a weak economy and strong stocks. And partly, I think what helps fuel that risk on is that if people get more comfortable with the idea of the Fed being done. I'm watching the S&P 500, and the level that, like a lot of people, I mean, it's not being a genius here or anything, but 38.10 of the S&Ps, and we broke above that earlier this week, and we've held above it on this pullback. And so I think the stock market's trying to, whether it's a bear market, tradable bear market bounce or not, I don't know. I lean toward it being a real bottom because I think that interest rates are probably near, have probably peaked. And I think the dollar is trying to turn down as well. These stars seem to me to be lining up. But of course, we can't be fully confident of it just because we still are. I mean, until proven otherwise, we have to assume it's a bear market bounce.
Well, Mark, you brought up the US dollar there, and that has coincided, it pulling back down has coincided with the markets and commodities moving back up. And that's really been the story of all year. The dollar, as it's moved higher, has pressured the markets, has pressured commodities, has pressured even the cryptoverse. And then whenever the dollar turns down, often linked up with rates pulling back down, then things turn back up again. So do you think that what's moving the dollar is more germane to what's happening overseas, like what we saw with the Bank of England, what we saw with the Bank of Japan? What's going on with some of the other central banks? Or is it reacting to Fed policy? We've heard people opine on both sides of what's moving the dollar. What do you think is moving the dollar? And is this downtrend going to stick with us?
Yeah, I hope you don't think that I'm waffling here, but I think it's like both. I think that these markets are so complicated. Very rarely do I see like a single cause. So of course I'd say that the Federal Reserve just given the central role of U.S. interest rates in the dollar, it's played a key role here, but it's not the only thing going on. Some countries are shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, Russia, China to some extent with its zero COVID policy, several emerging market countries. Mexico and Brazil, ironically, alongside Russia, are the only the only emerging market currencies that are higher on the year. And so I think that yes, that there's domestic reasons for the dollar strength, and I think there's global reasons. But like I say, I think that the key, I think, is that the market, it's not when the Fed begins cutting rates. Because think about this, the dollar, a dollar index bottoms and the euro tops out on the same day, ironically, January 6th, 2001. And so it seems to me that the dollar's rally is sort of long in the tooth. We know all the good news. And now I think now that the Fed funds hike is priced in, I think the market's feeling more comfortable taking some profits on long dollar positions. If I had to, the kind of bottom, top of the dollar, the bottom of the foreign currencies, I think we should expect is not all of them bottom on the same day, anything like that. But it should be more like a waterfall, like a sort of a cascading effect, if you will. And the currency that I feel most comfortable thinking has bottomed is the British pound. At the end of September, it got down to 103.50, according to Bloomberg, and that's the lowest price ever for the British pound, 103.50. We got up to this week, we've been up to about almost 116 and a half. What an incredible rally. And this is as, you know, of course, the financial orthodoxies come back to the fore there, and people feel more comfortable now. UK interest rates, as sterling has rallied, UK interest rates have fallen by about 100 basis points at the long end of the curve. I think sterling has bottomed. And so I'm looking at the other currencies with that as part of my like working hypothesis, which means I'd be more likely, more inclined, I should say, to buy dips in the foreign currencies than sell into rallies.
Interesting. Okay, so maybe a little turn in the currency markets as well. Mark, as we look to next week, even through the rest of this year, what is actually going to matter? What are you going to be looking for outside of course, the Fed meetings and whatever they have to say at their press conference?
Well, this might surprise you, Corey, that next week we have the U.S. midterm elections, and in my weekly note about what's going to happen in the markets, I don't even mention it. At the end of the day, for most people with medium-term perspective in investments, even short-term perspective, I'm not sure that the election result is going to be that important. It's important for, of course, for America, for partisans, but I think for a real policy, and the key policy, of course, here would be Federal Reserve policy, but also the federal government. There's another reason why I'm still negative on the economy. I think there's a headwind that people aren't recognizing yet fully, and that is how dramatic the budget deficit's falling this year. We were over 10.5% last year, and this year we're going to come in below 5%. And this kind of fiscal consolidation in 1 year took us about 3 years to do after the great financial crisis. So I'm thinking that I'm going to be watching those kind of the effect of both monetary tightening and fiscal tightening. But the one thing I don't think is going to have much impact is to get too concerned about the election, in which the House looks like it's going to go Republican, and the Democrats may be lucky if they can hold on to the Senate.
All right, Mark. Very interesting comments. Not even really paying or not writing about the midterm election that much. Let's see if really anything does happen out of that. But overall, boy, oh boy, these markets, at least they're going through still a little bit of a bounce. Again, taking this Q3 GDP number in stride too, also is important to note, just kind of looking at the big picture as you have outlined. Mark, I appreciate you joining us as always on the weekend show. Everybody, thank you for tuning in and spending some of your weekend with us. Please be sure to visit our website, kereport.com, and take a listen to all the daily editorials and company updates we recorded throughout the week. Mark, everybody, I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks. Good luck, everybody.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.